You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thanks, everyone, for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Our first guest has worn a lot of hats, and many of them political. He was a Fish and Game Commissioner under Governor Frank Murkowski, and before that, a Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Walter Hickel. He served as a longtime legislative aide, and today he's a consultant based in the Washington, D.C. area. Also roll in a stint as a police officer, a sheriff's deputy, a hot tar roofer, and a scuba dive instructor, and last but not least, a novelist. And that is what we're here to talk about today with Mekhi Campbell. His new book, North Coast, a thriller and romance that is set in Juneau. It's the second in the series. The first novel was Clean Slate, which also takes place in Juneau. So, Mekhi, you are back to promote your new book. What's it like to be back in town?
I miss Juneau tremendously. There was good reason to make the move, but Juneau is just a very special, wonderful place. We were there at a great time in our lives. We lived in Juneau for 30 years.
So you've had time to know Juneau well. What's the basic story of North Coast?
Well, the basic plot is there's a young woman named Grace Admonson from Juneau who is out kayaking up by the Dawes Glacier. And as they're kayaking back out into Cut Arm, her kayaking companion is accidentally run over by a large yacht. The large yacht has been chartered by a fellow named Josh Foley, who's a sort of Hollywood bad boy and drummer. And the idea was to keep Josh out of trouble prior to a big custody and settlement trial. And all of a sudden now, if Grace lives, there's a big problem and he stands to lose millions and millions of dollars. Grace flees from them through Forge Terror. I don't know if you've ever been through Forge Terror at mid-tide, and it turns into a whitewater rapids and clearly a place that they can't follow her. And in there, she runs into a fellow on a sailboat, and it kind of goes from there.
A lot of times when you're in Juneau, you'll be surprised by seeing one of these gleaming white floating palaces come by. And you wonder, like, who is rich enough to own that? Who's on that boat and what are they doing in Juneau? Is that what sparked this idea for a novel?
A little bit. I think we're all intrigued. We always lived where you could look down and see the boats in the harbor and you wonder what's up. There's a wonderful novel, The Shipping News, where they write a newspaper column about who's in town, what boats are in town in the harbor. And I always thought that'd be a great thing for Juneau.
So is Grace the main character?
Grace is, I think, the central character who ties it together. And she runs into Mick Halloran, who is a ex-sailboat racer who's up sort of in Alaska sailing by himself, kind of trying to get away from some past events in his life. And the two of them together and their relationship is a central part of the story.
Grace sounds like an interesting character. I mean, someone who disappears behind the rapids. Can you tell us a little more about her?
You bet. This is something that I spent a lot of time thinking about and talking to people and wanting to do it correctly and appropriately. Grace is a second grade teacher who works at Reader's Bookstore in the fall, but Grace has a father from Petersburg who's of Norwegian descent. Her maternal grandmother was Tlingit and her maternal grandfather was Filipino. There's some talk in the book about the native heritage in Southeast Alaska and the Filipino heritage there. And so I tried to work hard to get that right and do it in a good way. Some people were very helpful to me on that. In particular, Andrew Hope was very helpful to me on native naming protocols and what was appropriate in terms of talking about Tlingit name, Moiety clan and tribe. Byron Mlott was helpful to me in that. Some other friends up there were very helpful to me in that.
Did your last book, Clean Slate, did it incorporate native culture like this one?
Clean Slate did not really incorporate native culture. And that's such an important part of Alaska and Southeast. I'm going to be very curious as others read it, how they feel about it.
What did having a character with Native heritage add to your book, you think?
I think it's a critical part of Alaska and Southeast Alaska. I thought it brought depth and interest to it. There's also an Alaska State Trooper on the dive team, Leon, who's the Tlingit, and I think a very appealing and intriguing character. I think it just adds extra and presents the population of Southeast more in the mix, more the way it is.
So do you ever have any hopes that maybe some of your novels might be turned into a movie?
I'm laughing because Barbara Campbell, my wife, who many up there will know, has from the very first gone, screenplay, screenplay. And I did have some reviewers refer to the cinematic quality. What I've said is, I don't know how to write a screenplay. If somebody wants to take it and make a movie, that'd be wonderful. But it's not, I think, within my skill set.
Your new book, North Coast, does have some of the same characters that were in your first book, Clean Slate, namely Pete and Annie McLaughlin, who live way, 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 way out in the outskirts of Juneau, and they have quintessentially Alaskan adventures / misadventures. How's that book doing?
It's actually done well. I've been very pleasantly surprised. It came out in March of 2020, which is exactly when COVID hit, but it has slowly and steadily been increasing in sales over time. And we are fortunate to receive some good editorial reviews. One of the things that a number of reviewers have said about both books is that Alaska and the wilderness, et cetera, is sort of a real character in the books and drives a lot of elements of the plot in both cases.
For you, what is it that goes into making a good book?
Well, two things. For me, what I usually care about in a book is I have to care about the characters. There's some books you'll read where you think, I don't like these people. and I don't care too much if something bad happens to them or whatever. I think you have to have characters people care about. Had a reviewer said, Pete and Annie will live with you for a long, long time. And then something else that matters to me a lot is accuracy. When I'm reading a book, I may be going along and enjoying it a great deal and stuff. And all of a sudden you hit a factual issue, any host of things, how a particular boat is set up or a firearm or whatever. It's just wrong. And something goes clunk. It's a false note that destroys your disbelief.
Well, one of the things that is intriguing is your resume. I mean, it is truly a mixed bag from having been a scuba diving teacher to being a police officer. And of course, all your experience in politics. Does that help in coming up with the details for a novel? Do you use that background?
Yeah, I think it does. I was in law enforcement for 7 years, 3.5 as a police officer, 3.5 as an investigator for a sheriff's department right out of college in Ohio. And I did that up until I moved to Alaska. And that provided valuable experience, knowledge about how certain things work. And that was good. And then getting out and around more than anything else helped. So if you're talking about Forged Terror at mid-tide, it would be hard to do, I think, without having been there. So, yeah, I do think it helped.
Where do you get your ideas for your stories? I mean, obviously, certain things that happen might suggest a storyline, but like in the case of Pete and Annie McLaughlin, and Pete, of course, has a secret and it comes back and unfolds in the novel, but where did that come from?
I'm not sure. You start along and you have various ideas, and I admire and am somewhat envious of people who can plot out their entire book beforehand. You know, this is what's going to happen in chapter 10, et cetera. I'm more about get some good characters, put them in the situation, and then see what they're going to do and what's plausible and not plausible as we proceed. It often turns out the characters want to go somewhere different. and I give them their head.
Probably people will wonder if your characters in your two novels are based on real people, or maybe are they composites of people that you know?
Well, they're all fictional characters. However, a number of their names are borrowed. For instance, Pete McLaughlin, the main protagonist in Clean Slate, I borrowed his first name from my friend Pete Rouse, who in the early 80s lived just down the block from us and was Terry Miller's chief of staff. And then I borrowed his last name, my friend Harry Noah, who's commissioner of natural resources under Hickel. His wife is named Claire McLaughlin, and I wanted a sort of different Scottish name, and so I borrowed her last name for that.
And I guess Pete went on to work for President Obama, right?
He did. Pete had worked in the Alaska Senate for Tom Daschle when he was chief of staff there. He then became Obama's chief of staff right at the very end of his Senate career. And Pete was the second guy that President Obama hired.
You mentioned that you were working on Clean Slate in the 80s. What were you doing in the 80s?
In the 80s, I was working in the Alaska legislature. I was working then for Arliss Sterjaluski and wrote about three chapters, put it in the drawer, never did anything more with it. Then when I left Fish and Game in 2007, I retired as commissioner. I said, you know what I want to do is I want to get that back out and see what I can do. And so I wrote that, and really from January till about July, wrote the rest of the book.
So the big question for people might be, why aren't you writing about politics and things that you've been directly involved with? Because maybe you should write a book. You've experienced a vast panorama of Alaska characters in politics.
There are, but you know, I've been privileged to do sort of politics for my living all my life, but it's not something I want to spend all the rest of my time with. You know, it's good to have some clear alternative. There are almost no politics in either book.
Almost no politics.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to continue our conversation and just pick your brain on politics. But before we go, for people that would like to see you this evening, where do they go?
Hearthside Books at Merchant Wharf from 4:30 to 7. We'll be there signing books.
I'm sure you're going to have a lot of people there to see you. Well, there's so much I'd like to ask you. So when we come back, let's talk politics. Given all the hats that you've worn over the years, I can't resist getting your take on things. So I hope that's okay with you.
Happy to do so.
Okay. Well, we'll continue our conversation with Mekhi Campbell when we come back. Listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and we're back with Mekhi Campbell, author of North Coast and Clean Slate. But he also has, aside from being a novelist, an extensive political career in Alaska, working for two governors, working for the legislature, as well as working for Senator Lisa Murkowski, and now an energy and natural resources company in Washington, D.C. How does all of this mesh? How does this work for you?
Well, you know, my career has certainly evolved. I've been very blessed and fortunate to have a whole series of good bosses. Things move from one to the other.
So I have to ask you, since you're based in Washington, D.C., and of course you did work in Lisa Murkowski's office as her staff director on her Senate Energy Committee. So all of the things that are going on in Washington, D.C. must be very vivid to you. What's your take on January 6th?
I thought it was a sad, sad moment for our nation. Let me unequivocally say these were not people behaving like tourists. I think we'll move through it. I think in some ways, as dangerous and scary as it all was, that it showed the strength of our democracy, that we can take that kind of blow and keep on going and stuff. And so that's good.
Well, I'm sure that your thoughts must go to Lisa Murkowski, your former boss. What's your take on how she's navigating these days? Because although she is in the Senate minority, she seems to be a person in the spotlight and maybe has a lot of power at this point in history.
Well, you know, in Congress right now, perhaps more than for a long time, there is intense partisanship. When I first came back to Washington, one of the things that just bothered me the most was what I view as the hypocrisy of people who are for something if it helps their party or situation one day, and then a week later can be exactly against something if they don't think it helps them, and a malleability of values. Senator Murkowski, in my view, has shown the courage and leadership to say, I'm going to do what's best for Alaska. And she's clearly a Republican, but she says, first of all, she's a citizen of Alaska and the United States, and it's going to do what's best for Alaska. And that's not always easy. It's much easier just to kind of go along with the crowd.
Well, you worked for her father not too long after he appointed her to become senator to replace him in the Senate. Looking back at that perspective, seeing the person you saw then and the person you see now.
You know, I was very unsure when he did that about the wisdom of that appointment. I think that has turned out to be the best and defining action of his political career is to give us Lisa. I think actually from her father being a senator, she has inherited a strong set of values about the Senate as an institution and about our democracy. And that is sadly increasingly rare among members of the Senate and even more so among members of the House, where she cares about the institution and how it works for the country.
Well, she looks to be facing an uphill battle for re-election. Of course, it's probably predictable because she is not in step with the majority of her colleagues.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to be an uphill battle. I do think it will be a battle. You know, there's a saying in Washington, there are two ways to run. One is unopposed and the other is paranoid. So you want to take it very, very seriously. But I have faith in Alaskans to look at the available candidates and any honest look at her career and what she's done for Alaska, I think it gives a very clear indication of where you should go. I'm highly prejudiced and partisan about this. I freely admit that.
Okay. I guess we can forgive you for that since you did work for her. But you also headed up her staff on the Senate Energy Committee when she was chair. And now are an energy consultant. So I'd like to get your take on what we're hearing with climate change escalating. Fossil fuels are now obsolete. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting. There was, I thought, an excellent column by a friend of mine named Amy Harder. Amy is just one of the top-notch energy reporters in the nation. And she makes the very persuasive case that if we stop producing oil at a faster rate, then the demand of oil goes down. We actually imperil the move towards cleaner energy and a cleaner environment.
So I'm curious, what are your thoughts about our future with natural gas?
You know, I think it was in the early 80s, I was down in Seattle, natural gas conference, and there was a fellow named Arlen Tussing, who at the time was the preeminent natural gas economist. And he said, I have great news for Alaska. You have just tremendous amounts of natural gas. He said, I also have bad news for Alaska. So does everybody else, and theirs is nearer tidewater. And, you know, I think he has unfortunately been proven right throughout the ensuing decades. We do have a tremendous amount of gas, and it also may be down the road that LNG container ships could simply access the North Slope, take out gas directly without a pipeline. I don't know. I'd love to see the pipeline, but the economics of it remain intensely challenging.
It's quite the saga, isn't it? And to think that you've followed it all of these years. Are you sure that you might not want to take a stab at this and turn it into a political novel?
I think about it once in a while, but I have to admit, Barb says I'm happy when I write. I'm not sure that would be the case if I was writing about politics.
Okay. No politics. But what are you working on now?
Right now, I'm working on a third book called Pitfall, and that one's actually set out in Bristol Bay. You know, have some ideas, and I'm starting to develop some characters.
So we're going to hear about fishing in this next book.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. So I presume that Pebble Mine is going to feature prominently in your next book. Are you going to be pro-Pebble, anti-Pebble?
Well, there is a fictional mine named Rock Mountain that shares a lot of characteristics with the Pebble Mine. You know, just personally, I was first out at Pebble in 1992 as Deputy Commissioner of Fish and Game. And from the first time I was out there, I thought, well, I think this is going to be tremendously difficult for anybody to come up with a way to do, but they deserve a chance to put together a mine plan and propose it and have it evaluated. In 2018, I actually saw the final mine plan. In my judgment, as someone who's worked on a lot of mines, it was a shoddy and dangerous plan. In Pitfall, the name of the work in progress set in Bristol Bay, I've tried to take some of the knowledge of what I've learned over these last number of years working against Pebble and put it into the book. The challenge is I don't want it to be just an environmental screed. I want it to be real in terms of how it affects people's lives.
Wow. Well, we will look forward to that. I'm sure a lot of Alaskans will find that book fascinating.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I want to thank you, Mackay Campbell, author of North Coast and Clean Slate, for joining us. And we hope that we can have you back at some point to talk about your next novel.
Rhonda, thank you. It's been great. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for joining us.